3 with the Pickerings tonight, and I'm holding this night next week open so we can move into part 2. All right, let us move. We've been through the Gulf War. We are now... go ahead. We're 2004, something like that. Yeah, 2005.
Quick aside about Katrina.
Uh-huh. You want to do some on that?
Hold on. All right, one aside I wanted to make sure I get out before we leave Afghanistan. When our guy did his intelligence, when he gave his intelligence briefing to this high-ranking admiral, the admiral says, do I want to really know about this? And he said, well, you know, it's not good. And he goes, do you want me to pass it up to, Rich said, do you want me to pass up the chain of the command? He goes, pass it up the chain of command. That's what, so I wanted to share that with you.
Interesting.
That there was a, mm-hmm. So, in other words, it's called, you know, hey, if I don't know about it, then I can't be helped.
That's right. It's not in my lap. Yeah.
Yep. You got it, right? Hey, that's interesting. What'd you get? Not in my watch?
Not in my lap.
I wonder who said that.
Not in my watch either.
No. Okay.
All right.
Go ahead, John.
So, just a quick aside on Katrina. Rich had written a letter, an op-ed letter to a newspaper dealing with the whole Katrina incident. He was tasked to go down to areas just outside of New Orleans to retrieve errant vials of very infectious diseases that were, everyone fled so quickly that a lot of the refrigerators were left open and the floodwaters came in and you had vials of...
Wait a minute. I remember this. There was a bio...
Yep.
A BSL 3 or 4 facility down there, and they were trying to say how it was safe, and I didn't believe it for a second. Am I right? Nope. Am I thinking right?
Let me just say this, Jeff, which is interesting. Let's go back in history. Who's over there? Who had the huge bioweapons research facility during dealing with virus and infectious diseases? Tulane University, right?
There you go.
All right, no. So let's just keep that in mind, especially when we talk to Judith Berry Baker in that area of weapons research or you know, infectious diseases or...
No, you had it right. Weapons, that's what they are.
Biocontagions. Go ahead, Sean.
I believe they even had vials of Ebola bopping up and down in the waters.
Good
so
Lord.
They had to go in there in their white bio suits. It's 95 degrees. There's no light. And they're going through these facilities with snakes kind of swimming around them. And it was just absolute hell. So he was tasked to retrieve those items along with his team.
With about 24 Marines. Is that correct? Is that correct, Sean?
I don't remember the exact number.
Around 24 Marines?
But it was like that. But...
Okay.
He brought in one evening, Clay's bar, and he brought in these very gigantic pictures. And he pulls them out. They're boards, picture boards, that are very large. And they show women, primarily black women. And he said, these are the rape victims in the Superdome.
Yeah.
So anyone that thinks that didn't happen, wrong. What's more instructive, I go, Rich, these are boards. You did a presentation. You did a presentation for some subcommittee.
Mm-hmm.
About what actually happened.
Military. Go ahead.
I can't get into specifics, but the rapists, I will say this, the rapists were not black. They were white.
Most of them. Three quarters of them.
Most of them.
Those who were in the Superdome.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And keep this in mind, Jeff. We saw those pictures. Uh-huh. It's inside the Superdome.
Uh-huh.
And you see the women And actually, there was one picture of the rapist. It was the white rapist, and he was dressed in drag, trying to hide from the Marine contingent that was looking for them, because people had pointed him out and said, that's them. They got corroboration, and they knew exactly who the rapists were. I think there was around 23 or 24 of those guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
this is interesting. So, hold on. This is interesting. A little footnote. So, the government was eminently aware of what was going on in there, and they sent a special ops team in there to deal with
it. No. Be careful, Jeff. Be careful. No.
All right.
This is an interesting thing, is that when they were picking up the vials and also retrieving monkeys, okay?
Yeah.
From some of the laboratories, because the monkeys, some of them were infectious. Keep that in mind. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Keep that in mind. And they were thirsty and hungry, and they were using, the blow darts, they get them out of the trees.
Trank darts,
Yes. They found it was much easier just to open a bag and put a banana or water, and the monkeys would run right out of the tree, right into the bag, and they'd take them. So, and then a Huey would come in. I'm going to be more detailed here, Sean. A Huey would come in and then take the monkeys and the vials or whatever else they found. Now, they didn't spend too much time in the lab because, you're up to your chest in water, and there's alligators, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to be there. And the syringes, and it's just no way.
I understand.
So they did the best thing. You got it. So the best they could do was to clean it up and put the monkeys, and the Hueys would come in. And they had pontoon boats. So what they did was, instead of going back to their base, they took the initiative because they had some water. Says, hey, these people need help. So that was an on-the-spot decision.
It was a collateral move while they were there. How interesting.
That's how that worked. That's how this worked. Uh-huh. And so they said, let's go to the Superdome. I'm sure they had heard the reports that it was just copacetic.
Yeah.
And so they said, let's go down there and let's see what happened. Well, they got in there all right. And I often remember it was one of the major news, one of the mainstream media sites, maybe NBC, CBS, and there was a black gentleman outside sitting in the lawn. He said, you have no idea what's going on there. I won't go in there. I'm going to stay out here. Remember that? I don't know if you remember that. So those guys got inside there and they found out what was going on. And they found out there was these gangs, three or four gangs going around raping women. And those boards Sean talked about, we've seen big, big boards. One of the girls was raped. She was raped repeatedly that she was bleeding. I believe it was our guy who administered first aid, gave her nylons because nylon doesn't stick the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently she clocked one of the rapists and knocked out a tooth, so they were able to find out exactly which guy it was that tried. And I think there was about 23. So anyhow, they gathered these guys up. They got them all. Okay, one was hiding in a closed hamper. One was hiding actually in a big vat of feces, trying to hide from the Marines. One charged the Marine. He put his helmet down and knocked him down. So they tie-wrapped these guys, threw them in the back of the Humvees, and then took them away at some point, or took them to a place where they could hold them. So at some point, the gag officer came in, and he said, listen, I understand that we have these perpetrators, and that they've been positively identified. He said, but as you know, we have to follow civilian law, and they have to follow the constitutional rights. And so let's make sure we adhere to it. It was a gunny. I think it was gunny marine said, how about if we just tie wrap them and throw them in the swamp? And the JAG officer looked at him and said, no, and walked out the door.
Uh-huh. I got it. Enough said.
And that's it.
Got it. All right.
Let us move into areas that are going to begin to believe to be unbelievable to some people. We're going to move toward this now, if we're ready.
So, Rich gets pulled into state. Okay. And the admiral says to, and
Richard was reticent. He wasn't quite sure he wanted to go into state because he felt if he went into state, no one would have his back. Didn't trust it.
Uh-huh.
But his the admiral, who was his, I'm not going to do that because I don't even, I don't want to get located in on it. But he said, look, I'm glad that you're part of state. We're going to need as many of us in state when we make contact in 2017.
When we have contact.
Right. So Rich didn't say anything. And so he ended up meeting, I wasn't there. Clay, you pick it up because I wasn't there when
it was 2000. It was, this is about 2000. This is 2007 after he had been down in D.C. He was with state, I believe, and at that point, Sean, and he was with he had met with DIA and probably a couple alphabet agencies, I'm sure of it. And they were talking about USOs and the Aegis radar system, okay? So I'd seen him. He'd come up, and he had a really inquisitive look, puzzled look, and he said, hey, I got to ask you something. And he said, what does contact mean to you? I go, wow. I said, that's pretty specific. I said, contact. And I said, wow. I mean, are you talking? He says, extraterrestrial contact? And he looked at me, he goes, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. Any more to that, Sean? And I think we need as many in the state. I think he made that comment in front of both of us.
Correct.
At that time. So
he gets pulled in the state. And
so
Rich gets pulled in the state. So he's there from November, December, January time frame. So we're one night we're hanging out, we're talking, and it was after the Stevensville sighting. Right, Clay?
Okay, hold on.
In January?
Now, keep this in mind. In 2006, you had the O'Hare incident, okay, November. Okay? You with me on this, Jeff?
Oh, I broke the story right here with Peter Davenport.
Okay, fantastic, bro. No, I didn't hear you on there. I just want to make sure that you're there on there.
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, 2006, November, the O'Hare incident. Interestingly, January 8th of 2008, you had the Stevensville incident. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so go ahead and pick it up there, Sean. I know you were. I don't want to interrupt your stream of thought.
So we bring it up. He said, you know, interestingly enough, I'm going to a meeting tomorrow at the UN on these two specific incidents and other issues. And he said,
this is February 11th.
Correct, February 11th.
Now, Stevensville, again, just to mark this, was January 8th, so we're now up to February 11th, all right?
Correct. So he said, I want you to get this information out to the internet, but not until after I speak to you after the meeting, when I brief you roughly about what I can talk about roughly. And he had gotten permission.
Right.
He said, hold on, and he actually had gotten permission. He actually went outside, made a phone call, and he said, okay, but you have to wait till I see you. I don't want it out there before it happens, or it ain't going to happen. So we said, okay. So they had the UN UFO meeting, quote-unquote, at the UN. Now, it wasn't about UFOs that initiated the meeting at the UN. It was another topic. This is how they do it. So you've got a
there's a cover. All right, there's a cover. There's a diversion. I understand.
You got it. Correct. Exactly.
So they came in. He said the security was incredibly high. Cell phones, everyone was strip searched. You could bring nothing with you into the meeting.
This is 08?
This is
08. All right.
This is February 12th.
This is a month after Stevensville.
Correct.
Stevensville.
It's in the morning. In the morning.
Okay.
It's in the morning. So the essence of the meeting was, it was I can't remember the cover. I can't remember. Can you remember the cover issue?
Clark? Well, I wasn't. Well, I've been trying to find that out. Rich never told us what the cover is, but I think it's it had to deal with the shoot down of the Hawaiian. Remember the missile that happened? If I have my time frame right, remember the missile that the United States Navy shot down? I think it was a Chinese satellite that was flying too low, and they shot it near just a few hundred miles east of Hawaii.
Vaguely.
I can't be sure. It was a shoot down of a satellite.
It was a satellite.
We have to be fair. I don't know for certain because I really dug on that. Rich has often said one of the great covers is to be able to talk about the piracy that was happening in the Gulf of Aden and be able to say, hey, foreign domestic counterparts, hey, listen, we got to protect commerce and shipping. That's a perfect cover to be able to talk about things you want to talk about.
Okay.
Outside of that, that's how these guys work.
Right.
So I remember Rich telling me that, especially, hey, that piracy issue is pretty good cover. Do you take advantage of it? So I suspect strongly during that time, I think it was the shoot down of the satellite that they were using as a cover.
Okay.
And so that's where you can open and broach subjects normally not broached. You can't advertise, hey, we're going to talk about UFOs, as you well know, Jeff. Can't talk about UFOs, UAPs, God knows, you won't be able to do it. But once you get in there, when you're dealing with people sophisticated, at least many of them were military. Russians were there. The Chinese were there. The Indians were there. So you can start to broach the subject of what you want to talk about.
Okay. So Rich was there.
Yes.
What capacity?
Everybody was in civvies except for two Russians who were in uniform.
What was Rich's capacity? State sent him there?
Yes.
He was
actually working for the intelligence agencies, sheep dipped in state.
All right. And what was he doing? Was he leading? Was he watching, observing? What was he doing there?
No, he was starting trouble. And I mean that. Well, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that a lot of things got broached about the phenomena. What happened within that meeting was in how it came up, the UFO topic was about O'Hara and Stephenville and God knows where else in the world about the U.S. that's saying that's not our technology. It's not our technology.
Well, O'Hara, anybody who saw O'Hara, who was there, or studied the story from all the accurate write-ups about it, knows damn well it wasn't our technology. It was obvious. 5 minutes, that disc hovered right over that terminal. Was it C-17? I can't remember. And pilots loading and unloading. I had a pilot who was taxiing. It was a Boeing airliner. I forget which air. It might have been UAL. Across the runway, looking over at C-17 and looking at this craft hanging right in the air, broad daylight, right over it, I guess several hundred feet, 500 feet. And then there's a cloud deck. And after 5 minutes, the thing went straight up through the clouds and actually like a cookie cutter punched a hole through the clouds. It went that fast.
Now, I'm going to digress here just a little bit, just to offer just a little insight, okay? I'm inclined to believe you, okay? Because first of all, you're going to run an op over an airport. All right, wait a minute. Who benefits from those seeing the op? Okay.
Right.
Why over an airport? Okay. So you have to ask yourself that question: what advantage, tactical advantage, or strategic advantage?
Exactly.
For running an operation of a UAP over an airport.
The control tower saw it. It was on radar. It was all there. And I had one of the pilots on the program here for an hour. He described the whole thing.
Well, I'm only going to offer this digression. We're going to continue on with this, okay?
Yeah.
But what's happened with the advanced aerospace threat interpretation, identification program, is that there is a huge split within the military intelligence more intelligence, academia, intelligence, academia, military, maybe, aspect about what happened with the Nimitz tape and the release of the, what Luis Elizondo put out. So there's a huge split whether they're saying that's ours or theirs, okay? Now, interestingly,
well, you saw what the squadron leader, excuse me, Clay, you saw what the squadron leader said when he was asked point blank, what do you think it was? And he said on Fox and probably other outlets, he said, I don't know, but it wasn't from this planet. And that's a,
well,
that's a quote.
Well, Eric Davis said it's not human. Okay, let me be fair to Eric, physicist Eric Davis, who works as a chief physicist for Robert Bigelow. A very credible man.
Right.
Was with NIDS and right. One of the lead researchers on the Skinwalker Ranch, which is a whole other story.
A fascinating story, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we know something of that, too, off the radar. But what's interesting about that is that Eric is of the firm opinion that it is not ours. It's not human. He won't say extraterrestrial because we're dealing with a phenomena, okay? And what I mean by phenomena is that we can't relegate what we see or what the nuts and bolts strictly to UFO, extraterrestrial, UAP. In other words, are we dealing with interdimensional, multidimensional? Are we dealing with...
Well, how about let's just keep it simple. We're keeping with normal terrestriality, cohabiting a huge planet in which two-thirds of it is water, and they can go underwater and have all the facilities they want there. They could have been here forever.
That's for another story, but I have a theory for that. I call them terrestrials. In other words, they've been here so long, they're
right.
Extraterrestrial in nature, in origin. Okay, let's just make that presupposition as far as a hypothesis. They've been here so long on terra firma, these extraterrestrials, they are terrestrials. So you're dealing with that segment here.
There you go. Yeah, okay. That was my point. All right, very good. All right, go ahead.
I got you. But to make the point here is that there's the O'Hare incident and the Stephenville incident coming from the Navy. This is important. The Navy. The Navy who released, it was Navy tapes, the Fravor, the pilot Fravor.
Yeah.
It's tape.
Yeah.
Those are Navy tapes, okay? Which was confirmed by Eric Davis in terms of the chain of custody that I listened to the other day about where the tapes come from.
Do we know, briefly, Clay, do we know exactly where those tapes came from? Have we got it nailed down yet?
From what I understand, it came right from the Hornets. But it was released in 2000, actually, I think it was 2007. The German company UV, Ultravision, or Vision Unlimited, VU, German company named VU, released it, had the tapes, and that's where they originally got it from, either an intermediary or directly from the U.S., someone from the USS Hornet. That's where it came from. This is according to what Eric Davis is saying. Eric Davis is a chief physicist. Okay, so that's what I understand the chain of custody is. One of the things that was troubling me, okay? According to Eric Davis, John Lear, and we're digressing, but I think this is important in the program to understand about the provenance of the tape, is that according to Eric Davis, the sound that John Lear, which is interesting, John says there's a sound, you're hearing background noise, which is not consistent with communications aboard a fighter. But what happened, according to Eric Davis, is that the pilot left open his mic. In other words, he had a hot mic. That's why we could hear that background noise. That's why some people are claiming that this is a hoax. Okay? So if you have an open mic, that means you're going to have a conversation that's not going to be consistent with proper protocol in terms of pilot to pilot or pilot to ground or pilot to carrier. So that's why there was winds coming out of the west maybe and this and that. So it wasn't exactly the type of terminology that pilots. So what Eric is saying is that background noise that we hear within the pilots talking during the time they're chasing the Tic Tac He had a hot open mic. We'll have to wait on that and see how that turns out. But here's the important thing. Going back, it's the Navy who's pushing this forward. And it was the Navy that, in terms of our guy being a part of the State Department, sheep-dipped in the State Department, moving at that time the disclosure process, which is, in reality, we've had disclosure, but it's a confirmation process. Go ahead, Sean. I don't want to.
So at this point, me, you know, they have the meeting, so you have China, Russia, France, Great Britain are there. The Russians are in uniform. What's interesting is that the Stevensville case allows a wedge opportunity to step in and present an opportunity to move forward information, a relationship, relating of information to these principles, these countries. Stevensville was an opportunity. So off of the UN meeting, further meetings happened. Now, if you dovetail this into potential contact in 2017, what this means is that these principals will be notified and allowed. Their secondary and tertiary bureaucratic organizations will start moving on the planning of such an event. But they have to be aware of our position. They have to be aware that it's not ours, and that further dialogue can happen, but it won't happen at the UN, which did in fact happen after February 12th. There were further meetings. A few of them were upstate in New York.
Okay.
So it was an opportunity to get these principals together where they could start moving on the bureaucratic efforts needed to prepare for contact.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were efforts made to debunk and discount both O'Hare and Stephenville, Texas, that are still available. I mean, they're out there. It's strange how they do these things. One step forward, one step back, or half step back.
Right.
I mean, they'll debunk their own stuff. It's how they drag the people slowly in the direction
they
want them to go.
That is for another time, but that's called the core story.
Uh-huh.
And many of the NIT scientists and some of the others, people very close to this research, realize that there is a core story. In other words, memes, disinformation, misinformation melted together with the truth in order to acclimate and move the public into a particular direction.
There it is. Okay. All right. Very good. So we have the UN meeting. It did happen. Do we have documentation on that?
No, no way.
We don't have any type of
documentation.
Right. It wouldn't be a successful meeting if there was documentation on it. I get it. I understand what you're saying.
Keep this in mind too, Jeff. You know, I envy George Knapp that. He at least, with Bob Lazar, he had a civilian, and there was a lot of loose ends, the Los Alamos, the phone book, W-2 form. So that's a civilian. It's hard to cover up. So I think it's maybe much more difficult to cover up the civilian sector. But in the military, forget it.
Right.
Forget it.
No, I remember.
Especially when you got a guy.
Yeah.
But you're dealing with an analog guy. You know, our guy's analog. His records have been swept up long ago. He was black all the way back in Vietnam. So it's so difficult or almost virtually impossible to track him that even if you could track him, I'll go one better.
Mm-hmm.
You have a nice big fire in St. Louis in 1972, 73 that gets rid of half those records.
Mm.
Right before the church in Pike Herons.
Mm.
So what I'm saying is that these guys gotten quite good. I remember Rich would say this. He said they gotten quite good of learning from mistakes to be able to make sure that they could keep fail-safe contingencies in place so that nothing gets compromised.
Define fail-safe for our audience. Define fail-safe as it's used here.
Fail-safe
it's a parallel construction of lives like Rich has his IT life, his life never in the military, and then he has his other life,
mm-hmm.
which was in the military. And so they create markers, incidents, evidence, records where everything you say that you're connected to the military gets debunked. And that happens when a program gets compromised and they go into what they call fail-safe, where...
Well, they have to build themselves an out, and that's it. I got it. I understand.
You know when that out was built, first built? When we met our source, the day we met him. Think about that. So, you know, as soon as we got vetted, at that point, fail-safe began. Keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. That's how this works.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this works.
At any time, it's all gone. It's gone. Just gone. There have been many instances of records, massive, critically important government records being destroyed. We have the 9/11, the Pentagon. We have the Mura building. We have the St. Louis fire. We've had other strange fires as well. And what they do is when things get to the point of being too sticky, they just burn them up or destroy them. And now it's all digital. See, that's back in the day when there was still paper. Anyway.
But digital, as you well know, is digital is much harder to conceal, especially with the WikiLeaks with Julian Assange. Uh-huh. It's getting tenuous.
Yeah.
And it's really, 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 really getting difficult.
So they're going to go back to paper. Is that what you're saying?
I don't want to go back to paper, but, you know, the smart thing is it's an aside. Jeff, have you seen the John Wick series?
No.
With Keanu Reeves? Well, if you watch number two.
This is TV?
That's a movie. Your listeners definitely will love John Wick. He's a great action hero. Keanu Reeves is one of the best out there. So, and listen, he's fun to watch. But anyhow, it's a good storyline. Great, it's wonderful. But he's in Italy, and he's communicating with a very ultra secret organization of maybe assassins and people that need to be gotten rid of. And then they hire always these top guys to do it, right? But they don't communicate. It's interesting. They showed a communication system that wasn't digital. They showed the old vacuum tube, you know, like where you plug in the like you plug into the wall. Yeah. So that's how. In other words, they were communicating through an antiquated system
like 1930s and 1940s radios.
Yeah. Think of. Isn't that brilliant? No. Mm-hmm. Wait. Remember that recent thing that came up about? Oh God, what was it? Communication with the. I know maybe it was a fusion GPS that came up in England with a particular diplomat here, Democratic diplomat here in the name escapes me, but here in Washington D.C. And what came up is that this woman went for her ham radio operator's license.
Uh huh.
Now, does the NSA spend much money and time listening to ham radio operators?
Shortwave?
No. No, I mean, it's an antiquated system, so the money and the time and energy is not going there. So if you think about it, what a brilliant way to hide communication.
By the way,
I'm by my intel source.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this is, you know, sometimes it's like, hey, snail mail works. Sometimes it really works. So something we should consider.
Well, there's too much of a spectrum to monitor all the time, and from shortwave to ultra HD microbursts and encoded and all the rest of it. How are you going to monitor all of it? I guess you can with enough computers, but it's tough.
Who would ever think to monitor ham radios?
That's funny.
In this day and age.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the whole metadata program is not about monitoring time and information in real time. It's about freezing everything that was ever said and sent until you have enough of a reason to approximate who did what, and you're able to retrieve the information. That's what the whole metadata program is out in Utah. It's everything said and done frozen in time.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of material.
Everything.
Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of information.
We got the UN meeting. All right.
With 2012, the UN meeting happens. 2016, we break it to Open Minds Forum, okay, about the meeting. there's a whole bunch of flack that happens.
Back up, Sean. Yes, we did the Open Minds, but it was actually to Robert, to Michael Sala and Robert Morningstar at UFO Digest, where the original stories right. went out to those two venues. Okay. And then it was a little bit later, not much later, Open Minds was brought into it. They had the, well,
Open
Minds
Forum received it February 16th, 2008. Okay, so the information goes out in Open Minds Forum. In addition to
what information are you talking about?
The UN meeting.
Okay, and Open Minds Forum for our listeners is what?
It's an internet forum where they talk about these issues like UFOs.
All right.
Okay.
It no longer exists, by the way. It actually, when we went into failsafe, not soon after that forum crashed and burned, which interestingly is. I don't really know what happened, but it happened soon after our guy went in the failsafe. Go ahead, Sean.
So on February 22nd, 08, Richard goes back from a meeting out west in a secured, undisclosed military location, and it's not Area 51. At that point, he meets a silicon-based life form. They're in bio suits. He doesn't really know what he's looking at.
He's in a bio suit. He's in a facility out west. They're in a bio suit.
Life.
All right. A silicon-based life form is in a bio suit.
Right.
Now, we're not talking about little grays or tall blondes or reptile types or insectoids. We're talking about a silicon carbon-based life form. All right.
He subsequently finds out that they're 85% silicon, 15% carbon.
Is he coming? Excuse me, I've got to step aside here just for a moment. Is he coming back and continually updating you guys on his life and times, or are these informational outbursts coming in packets here and there?
I understand is that, go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Clay.
No, I want to back up here a second, okay? We got to back up because there's, like I said, Jeff, this is so much. After the UN meeting, he went upstate four or five times, okay? Discussing disclosure issues with his foreign and domestic counterparts, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. There's a Chinese official across the table, and it got acrimonious. The Chinese official said, "You pay for it."
Meaning
disclosure.
You're gonna take the heat for disclosing the reality.
Yep, you got it. You're 100% correct. In other words, you're the guys that kept the secrets, and you got to take the heat.
Well, that makes diplomatic.
That actually happens.
Yeah.
That actually happens in the March April time frame. Okay.
It makes perfect sense to me. Okay.
So we got to back up. Goes up.
Go ahead, Clay.
Okay. So he, four or five times, you know, they went upstate New York and they had that. Now, the Russian, he actually got along very well with the Russian, okay, because the Russian doesn't like the Chinese. They don't like the Chinese. And when he basically told them to F off, and literally they stood up and they went face to face. And Rick said, "Hey, listen, I was out of bounds. I was really pissed off. I apologize." He apologized. We sat down and we continued. But I think that was it for Rich. In the diplomatic end of the disclosure process, because he was subsequently moved into another program, which Sean just broached. Okay.
Yeah, but before we go there,
remember, Rich was tasked to go to certain European nations, remember, and talk about the disclosure initiative. Remember that, Sean?
Okay, I'm going to get to that. Okay, so on
okay, all right, then I'm getting ahead of myself. All right.
Yeah, you're getting a little ahead of yourself. 12/22/08, he goes to an unsecured location and he interfaces with these things. He doesn't know what he's looking at. He sees this thing, an undulating blob of Clado in Battleship Gray. He doesn't know, that's the biosuit. He sees what he thinks is some sort of appendage underneath it, kind of bumping up through the biosuit, but he really doesn't know what he's looking at.
Is there a helmet on this suit?
No. It looks like a blob of Clado.
All right.
Okay. But it he doesn't see that. What he sees initially, he's entrained to see some sort of diplomatic official. And he sees this diplomatic official, which he looks at as if some assistant undersecretary of state, and that entrainment ends after 3 or 4 minutes, and the thing turns into this Klaatu thing. So they're able to entrain an image for a very short period of time onto the viewers, and each person in the room saw something slightly different. They didn't say it was what Rich said.
Who is controlling the implant of the visual cortex in the brain? Who was doing it?
The
item in the suit. Okay.
The ET itself was able to entrain onto the viewers exactly what that viewer thinks they wanted to see.
Okay.
But they could only
it's
do
like
it
a psychic projection. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then
exactly.
When that ends, he sees what he sees. Now, I got the initial email from him saying, I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what this is. So it's not like he said, it's this, this, and this. He goes, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Now, you say you got an email from him?
Correct.
Okay, why is he emailing something of above top secret nature?
Who says it's
not
above top secret?
No, it's not classified. No.
Why not?
That's the whole point.
First of all, who's going to?
Why would it be? Now you create a paper trail.
Okay. Who would believe it, I guess, is the bottom line.
Exactly, Jeff. First of all, who would believe it? Exactly.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. So that happens. In late February into early March, Rich then makes a trip to Europe. He goes to Spain, France, Great Britain, Italy, Germany, parts of North Africa, and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
The subject is support and fallout from unambiguous contact for these societies. He then attends, from the 19th to the 21st of May, 3 meetings in upstate.
Okay, good. John,
which
right.
He had the fallout with the Chinese counterpart. They said they want the U.S. to pay for any damages due to the result of unambiguous contact. Rich actually chaired that meeting.
Well, actually, disclosure in unambiguous contact. So it was one. It was kind of all. Is a.
Well, no, I don't have that in the emails. I have unambiguous contact, which means
ships
over the cities. Okay, so that happened. Those meetings in Catskills happened from the 19th to 21st of May. After that happened, he got moved into another program.
Okay.
Okay. That program was an off-world program.
Was a what?
Off-world program.
Okay. All right. You heard right. I just want to make sure people heard that. He got moved into an off-world program. In other words, he was going out there. Now, let me do something.
Not our technology.
I got it. All right.
Our technology.
Gotcha. I gotcha. Okay. Henry Kissinger said something in 1991 that merits repeating here, and I mentioned it the other night at a Bilderberg meeting. And he said, today, he's talking about one world government. He said, today, America would be outraged if United Nations troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there were an outside threat from beyond, i.e. an extraterrestrial invasion, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all peoples of the world will plead to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. When presented with this scenario, let me finish, almost done. Individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by the world government, end quote. True, not true?
It's something
it's
that Clay and I thought about exhaustively, that it could be, this information could be used for that purpose. I mean, if you don't monitor that, we were very well aware of that quote.
Of course, everybody in the field is. Yeah, a lot of people listening aren't.
Well,
all right.
Sure.
Let me bring this up. Fletcher Prouty wrote years ago in the secret cave, in his writings, the late Fletcher Prouty, which is his research is just fantastic.
He was on the program here many times over the years. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good, Jeff. And I'm not surprised. But Fletcher Prouty wrote that one of the bureaucratic changes they made to the military was to call the War Department or Department of War, the Department of Defense.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
And in that semantical phrase laid the groundwork for the bureaucrats, okay, or for the control to be put in place in emerging technological complex societies. This is why John Alexander is correct, Colonel John Alexander, is that in order to get the funding for the advanced aerospace threat identification program is that they had to call it a threat in order to get that funded.
National defense,
said,
national security, I get
you,
it.
So you got it. So that is how funding is put into place. And, you know, the sine qua non or, you know, the big enchilada funding is 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm.
It put it all in place. You put all those bureaucracies in place. You put the structure in place, the infrastructure and everything that entails full spectrum control. Wow, that's interesting. Now you start talking about contact, disclosure. You start talking about contact. You know, I have to ask yourself, and I've often speculated, you know, what was this program really about? Was there ostensibly another program in play that was the real design for the war on terror? And that's just a question, John. I mean, Jeff, I'm wondering about that. So, Sean, you can elaborate if you'd like on that.
We have, just so you know, we have 2 minutes for this time. Okay. Then next Tuesday, we'll pick it up right here.
Okay, so we're at the point at which he gets into this quote-unquote off-world program, which, you know, at the beginning of your statement, at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned Broadbent, people like that. Jeff, that was very painful for us. First of all, we were maligned. We were harassed. Someone we cared about deeply, Richard, his life was destroyed. He got nothing out of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, his name was kicked around like a soccer ball.
Exactly.
No, I mean,
so when
he really got destroyed.
That's painful.
Well, he obviously became a problem for his superiors as well. This didn't go over right, or did it? Did they expect this, or did they not? That's a tough question.
Well, that is a tough question. I think that the Navy didn't like it at all, but the power structure said, hey, fail safe is fail safe, and he had a lot of autonomy,
mm-hmm.
and it blew up. So now it's damage control, protect the program. No more digging. That's for the next show. We'll talk about that. But he did not benefit. So for people to say a fraud, call him a fraud, and say, what did he get out of it? If people only knew what his present state right now, they would be, I think some of those guys that exposed him would be quite ashamed, I got to tell you.
Well, I hope they didn't do to him what they did to Clark McClellan and strip away all of his government pensions and support and everything, because what we're going to hear next week is...
Yeah, that's excellent. That's an excellent point. I don't know what's going to happen in terms of that, but mm-hmm. I know that Rich is in a place right now where he's very, very, very happy. And he lives the simplest...
That's
simplest,
priceless. Simplest, I'm glad to hear that. That's great news. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's off the grid.
Very nice.
And he's happy.
Well, good.
So
he
okay.
said,
that's
he said this,
that's
Jeff.
Right.
He said, "I spend my whole life in the military, learning how to survive, and I know how to do it." And he does. And we decided after this point, we kept our mouth shut, and like we're not going to name names or places, and we're going to be very careful. We want this program to move forward, and. I think it's time to talk a little bit more openly about that program and what's ahead, because it's not going to go away.
No, I get that's the big thing.
We, it's not going to go
yeah,
away.
We've turned a corner. We walked through a door. We're not going to go back. At least that's the way it looks to me as well. You know, perhaps more than I do, but you were given, and this is my last question, what kind of green lights to do this stuff, to come back into the public eye? Can you tell me? I don't want names. I mean, just in general. You got clear signals? Were they ambiguous? Are you taking a risk? How does it work?
Well, I gotta quote Shakespeare. Shakespeare said in Twelfth Night, "O time, untie this knot, not I, for it is a knot too hard for me to untie."
Hmm.
Time passed. Seven
mm-hmm.
years passed.
Mm-hmm. Almost eight.
It's pretty much as simple as that.
All right, very good. Well, we will pick this up, and we're going to bring the whole story out, the rest of it, next week. If we need more time, we'll do that as well. I do want it memorialized here, so there's no mistaking any of it. If you do other shorter venues, you'll never be able to cover this as it should be, and we're going to get it done here so it's full and complete, and then we'll spin it off. You take it wherever you want, but I want to make sure we have it all down. And thank you very much for being here. Excellent presentation. I think we walked through it at the speed that it required and warranted and deserves, and I think people have a good grasp on it, especially after gripping what William Tompkins said, Bill, in all those interviews. And so we'll talk to you next Tuesday, gentlemen.
Sounds
thank
good
you.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Excellent.
All right. Good night.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night, brother.
Clay and Sean Pickering. And we will rejoin you in 21 hours tomorrow night.